Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Monday. It's the 24th of November, Thanksgiving weekend. Very nice to have you with us on this Monday. And let's introduce the panel to you, and then we'll get to the topics, and then we'll introduce the way of getting a hold of us so you can write, or you can, only write. That's good enough.
Semaphore.
On various
we'll give you two ways to write. Exactly, okay. Libby. Yes. Thank you. Here we go. In this hour, let's welcome WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joe. I'm really, Ray, you make this weather happen. I just noticed you predicting a bad weather.
No, Gustina's the weather alarmist. He makes it happen.
No, but you read it. Therefore, you're responsible.
Fine. It hasn't happened yet.
Remind him of that during the letters.
You read, therefore you are responsible.
WAMC's Ray Graff is here.
Hi.
And political consultant extraordinaire Libby Post. Good morning, all. You can join us by emailing us at roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage. It's wamc.org/roundtable. wamc.org/roundtable. And what does that buy you? Well, that gets your name up on the site and allows all of us to see it and all of us to anyone who wishes to comment, to comment. And that's very nice and the larger cyber community. So that is an option as well, but we also welcome you to email us directly, roundtable@wamc.org. Let us go to the topics for today and talk about some things. We were obviously spoke at great length on Friday's program about immigration, and the president has been around the country defending his use of executive authority on immigration. Of course, this was the big subject on the Sunday talk shows. In an interview broadcast on Sunday, President Obama said he rejects Republican criticism that he has exceeded his authority in moving to spare millions of undocumented immigrants from deportation, adding that he has been very restrained in his use of executive authority. Angry Republican lawmakers have accused Obama of unconstitutional, even imperial overreach. They have pointed to past remarks in which he himself suggested that his powers to act were limited. But Mr. Obama, in the interview aired Sunday on the ABC News program This Week, said that history was on his side. Both Democratic and Republican presidents, going back decades, had taken similar actions. The history is that I have issued fewer executive actions than most of my predecessors by a long shot, he said in the interview. The difference is in the response of Congress, and specifically the response of some Republicans.
There was a fascinating thing about, well, first of all, I am delighted that Obama has decided not to be a punching bag anymore.
Right, that's right. He's really come out fighting. And give me a break about the use of executive power. This is what a president is. This is what a president does. Nobody complained when George Bush did it.
And Lincoln. Very few people know that the Emancipation Proclamation was either executive, is either executive power or an executive order of some kind. But basically, that's how it happened, and he was very careful. There's a great article in paper this morning about the whole thing.
But that was that was in a time of emergency, though, right? And war. So that was slightly different.
Yeah.
No, this could be seen as an emergency, not a war, but definitely an emergency.
But not a state of emergency.
No, but we have, it's all according what you think a state of emergency is for the people who are being affected. We've got millions upon millions of folks in this country working, supporting themselves, paying taxes without any legal status, and that it's time for that to stop.
And I could go even one step further, Raymond, in joining Libby in her dissent. No, it's called the High Court. You see, you've already given what would probably be, might be the majority opinion. So now Libby issued a dissent, and I'm joining in her dissent, which is that this is a sort of slavery that's going on in this country. You got 12 million people, any of whom can be thrown into the back seat of a car and not seen again, or can be taken advantage of by unscrupulous employers and others. And so we have this two-tiered economy. I think this is, when you're talking about 12 million people, you're talking about a very serious serious problem in this country. Think about it. Think of all the extortion that has happened over the years. You don't take what I'm giving you, into the back of the car.
Think about think about the way that people have been victimized as illegal immigrants. And I'm not just talking about the people who are migrant workers in this country, but you have folks who stigmatize and victimize their own countrymen in terms of getting them here, making them work as indentured servants to try and pay off the how much it costs to get them here, and they can never get out of that debt. You know, things need to change. And we need to be humane, and we need to take a humane perspective about this. Immigrants are what built this country. We are a country of immigrants. That's what I learned in school. We're all about the melting pot when I was a kid. And the fact of the matter is, immigrants is what are what made this country great. And anybody who says we need to get rid of all the immigrants means deporting many, many, many of us, because I am a grandchild
of
immigrants.
But I think that Alan is fond of talking about stealing the narrative, and I think one key term here. Now, Libby, you say immigrants, but we're a nation of immigrants, and the nation's immigrants came through Ellis Island and were processed and were duly recognized by the government. What a lot of people don't say in this argument is these are illegal immigrants. This is not the same as immigration, which I don't even think Republicans are arguing against.
Which is why I thought the president's remarks in the This Week interview was important in that distinction, because he, to quote the Times article, he framed his action not as an amnesty for some undocumented immigrants, but as a directive in part to federal agencies to focus their attention on those with criminal records, not on law-abiding, tax-paying, long-time immigrants. And all about 5 million of the estimated 11 million undocumented immigrants would be protected.
But Joe, even, I mean, I have to say, I sat here as Ray and I often don't agree on some of these things, and I was nodding my head, because he's right. You know, you are now parsing, you're making a distinction between people who illegally came into the country and people who are crooks while they're in the country. The initial illegal act was coming into the country. And I don't think anybody denies that. I think the one place that Democrats and Republicans can agree is on the closing of the borders, although I have to say that the immigration patterns now have sharply decreased. In other words, things have gotten better in Mexico. Actually, people are going back to Mexico. We're not seeing, so that you've got the Central American countries that are supplying people. But I think Ray makes a point about how they got here. Nevertheless, they're here. And there are 12 million of them, and we have to do something about
that. And some of them are paying taxes. Yeah. I mean, they're working
one way or another.
Taxes. They're
paying taxes.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, come on. They're here. And they are doing jobs that Americans don't want. And what happens when all those folks leave? The noblesse oblige, the 1% in this country, will have a coronary, because all the folks that do their menial labor, they're cleaning, they're lawn cutting,
it isn't
their
only
gardens.
It isn't only the 1%. Yeah. It's practically everybody else.
Yeah, there's a lot of people. Everyone's going to be up in arms, because all those folks who take care of those day-to-day needs that people have, whether they can do it themselves or not, they hire folks to do it, those folks will be gone. Look at farms. The farmers in this country are saying, let these people stay. Who are we going to get to pick the crops?
Although there, to be fair, there are those people in some of our diverse population who say those people are stealing our jobs. Now, do I believe that? No, I don't. I think that, you know, if there's a willingness to work, you can make mm-hmm. you can make it work. You can't have it both ways.
Right.
But I do think that that's happening.
I thought you were going to say something, Ray.
Nope, just okay. Stifling a belch.
Okay, great.
is the belch politically oriented, or is it
possibly.
Philosophically oriented?
Sort of, what I thought,
we'll
actually.
Find out at the break.
All right, we have, yes, thank you. We have breaking news we will tell you about when we come back, and we'll comment on that, and we'll be back right after the short break.
Support comes from Rhinebeck Artist Shops, professional picture framing and fine art materials, Rhinebeck, New Paltz, and now 793 Broadway in Kingston, rhinebeckart.com. Ward's Nursery and Christmas Shop, Great Barrington, for indoor color, cyclamen, begonia, mums, orchids, ferns, and tropicals. craft classes, mini zoo, and Santa's workshop. Wardsnursery.com. Edward Garbosik, certified financial planner serving all of Western Massachusetts, providing customized financial retirement strategies for those approaching or in retirement. Ed at havokinwealthstrategies.com. And Southern Vermont College, Bennington, Vermont, career programs in nursing, criminal justice, sports management, and radiologic technology, svc.edu.
Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel is stepping down under pressure, the first cabinet-level casualty of the collapse of President Obama's Democratic majority in the Senate and a beleaguered national security team that has struggled to stay ahead of an onslaught of global crises. The New York Times reported just 6 minutes ago, that the president is expected to announce Mr. Hagel's resignation in a Rose Garden appearance later today. He made the decision to ask his defense secretary, the sole Republican on his national security team, to step down last Friday after a series of meetings over the past 2 weeks, according to senior administration officials. Again, the Times reports that the officials describe Mr. Obama's decision to remove Mr. Hagel as a recognition that the threat from the Islamic State would require a different kind of skills than those that Mr. Hagel was brought on to employ. A Republican with military experience who was skeptical about the Iraq war, Mr. Hagel came in to manage the Afghanistan combat withdrawal and the shrinking Pentagon budget in the era of budget sequestration.
Well, it can't be an easy job, let's put it that way. And there are always a myriad of reasons that people leave jobs. And one of those is always, relationship between the boss, and the individual. So maybe something is going on. It's also that Hagel's a Republican and Obama is a lame duck. And therefore, sometimes you might want to get out from under to reestablish your Republican. Mm-hmm. I'm just riffing on this.
The other thing is that the Republicans are really angry with Hagel for taking the job. They haven't given him an easy time. The confirmation hearings were not pretty, and they haven't been very nice to him. I think they see him as a turncoat through all of this. And I don't think, I don't see him throwing his hat in the ring for president next cycle.
Oh, no.
But there has been some missteps in handling of the strategy of handling ISIS or ISIL or the Islamic State or whatever we're going to call it this week.
What did he do this time that prompted this? So if we go back to August, the president in an interview said this ISIS or ISIL is basically a JV team. And then within mere moments, it seemed, Hagel said this is an existential threat to everything that we have in the U.S., basically contradicted the president. Of course, Hagel was perhaps closer to being correct, although hyperbole runs rampant in Washington. But so what forced the hand in this instance, I still don't know.
Well, it seems, I think Alan hit it as far as the discord between the president and other advisors within the administration. He never seemed to, according to the articles both in the Washington Post and the New York Times, which I'm just skimming because they just were released, is that he never really fit in. He was never able to inspire confidence of the Pentagon. He, as Libby mentioned, there was the confirmation hearing fight, and he came in pretty wounded and never really gained the confidence of the people on board. And then at some point you have to pull it and say, okay, we're done. The question I have is, okay, what now?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, no,
you,
I mean,
you assume he has somebody in mind, but wow, that's not going to be a fun fight.
You know what has to happen is either you fill the job or you don't fill the job. Either the deputy becomes basically the acting, and but that's a long time to go, or you find yourself a very respectable Republican to take the job. We have at least one senator now suggesting that we declare formal law. War on ISIS. Yeah. That the United States goes to war with ISIS, and that includes that gets
so
the
let's not pick him.
Let's not pick him. At the top of the list,
according to the Times, are Michelle Flournoy, a former Undersecretary of Defense, Senator Jack Reed, a Democrat of Rhode Island, and a former officer within the Army's 82nd Airborne, and Ashton B. Carter, a former Deputy Secretary of Defense. So at least, according to the Times, that there's some depth. Who knows how deep it is, but...
Well, remember who these guys are. These are people, these Republicans are people who do not want to give one inch to the president. And you know that this is going to be held over this confirmation
One inch, regardless of the impact that it's going to have on our country. That's what's so heinous about this, is that ISIS is a threat to our lives. There's no two ways about it. They're clear about what they want to have happen. And the Republicans are going to play politics with this to score points with an ever-elusive base that they're losing, considering what they're doing on immigration.
Well, let's see what happens. I mean, they haven't done it yet. This announcement was only made. We can't criticize them for something that hasn't happened yet. Right?
Well, we could actually criticize them for anything we wanted.
I know you could. Based on past behavior,
Raymond.
All right.
Don't you see?
Yes.
But don't you see?
I get you.
According to according to CNN, they're saying that Hagel will stay on until a nominee is chosen. So again,
it's not the timing. You know, when Holder decided to step down, that we all questioned the timing, and we were still not quite sure what happened there, and the timing of this one as well.
You know, you've got fans all over the place.
I don't think,
Tom just wrote, and he said, after I accused you of having read the bad weather forecast, and therefore was responsible for it, Tom wrote, said, don't kill the messenger.
That's right.
I just thought I'd mention
Tom.
You have fans.
He keeps coming back, so nobody's killing him.
Not yet.
He's still here.
Oh, you mean...
You're killing me with 1,000 cuts in every panel.
Oh, yeah.
Cut. Yeah, it's true. That's my plan.
Yes, I know.
Where were we on Hagel? Okay, so if we and then also, but timing, Alan, isn't timing always after a major election? Is when you start cleaning house and get ready for the new year?
Well, I suppose that's right. We hear major rumors coming out of the Cuomo camp that there's going to be a pretty total house cleaning there for the next 4 years, including, say the WAGs, the loss of Larry Schwartz. The secretary or the head man for Cuomo, who was also the head man for Patterson, you may remember.
Right.
And there seemed to be this interesting thing in which Schwartz negotiates this thing. Patterson gets out, Cuomo comes in, and Schwartz becomes the head guy. And now Schwartz is one of the pieces that everybody's very interested in terms of the ending of the Moreland Act Commission, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So, Joe, the point is that in terms of timing, there are 1,000 reasons for this. I mean, people get really, really tired. They go home and they say to their wife, oh, my goodness, you know what I face today? And the wife says, why don't you retire, Alan? Oh, no. You know, what is this? So there's always, you know, there are always 1,000 different things that could be going on.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to go over to news from the BBC. We'll come back. We'll continue our conversation. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our website, WAMC.org/roundtable. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion this morning, and we are welcoming and entertaining your letters this morning, roundtable at WAMC.org, as well as WAMC.org/roundtable. And before we move on to other topics, we have these letters to read.
All right. Rich says, the news out, Best are owned by big business. They are more about profits than ever. Bridges that are in danger get little play. ISIS is a threat, is pushed by the military-industrial complex. Walking through parts of Chicago is a threat to you as in New York City. We need a society that where we do not wait until the news at 11 p.m. Okay.
I have no idea what that was
me
about.
Me neither.
Okay.
Me neither.
Oh, I think about Hagel saying that ISIS was a threat.
That it's harder to walk through Chicago.
Okay.
Okay, JR says, good morning, panel. For practical and humanitarian reasons, wouldn't it be reasonable to consider increasing the quota of immigrants coming here from anywhere in the Americas, both a concession to the relative ease of breaching a shared border and an act of compassion to people so desperate they'll risk possibly jumping from a frying pan into a fire? And let's see here. We did that one. Let's see. I don't know. Companies must pay. I pay. Does anybody know what that means? I pay.
Yes.
Companies must. What does that mean, Joe?
It's a. It is a way of currency for a new Apple currency product that they are selling that you can pay with your iPhone.
I get it.
I pay.
I get it. So companies must I pay Americans a living wage. Make colleges take Americans and not foreigners. Make colleges take Americans. And not foreigners. That's what it says.
As in, don't accept foreign students.
Yeah. Well, as in, I object. What can I tell you? As a college professor who wants diversity in my classrooms, I happen to have a brilliant Iranian student in my class this semester, who offers so much to the other young people in that class about the way in which journalists are treated in Iran, that I wouldn't want to even entertain that for a minute. And then Brian says, have we forever passed by any possibility of an age of civility in American politics? I keep warning people about this. There hasn't really ever been an age of civility in American politics. You want to know about that? Go back to what Thomas Jefferson and John Adams had to put up with, you know.
Go back to the Weehawken
and
Plain.
In their days. Yes, that's a very good point. That's a very good point. And I think that's it. Joe, do you see anything else?
It looks good to me. I think that's the lot of them. We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also go to WAMC.org/roundtable. Let's go to other topics at large for today and talk about what else. And I guess the big story, if the elephant in the room for the news world is waiting for what's going to happen in Ferguson. The president spoke about this in his This Week interview as well, of saying that he hoped that any protests would be peaceful, but also said that there was plenty of evidence that they would not be. But meanwhile, in a city bracing for another convulsion, the waiting game looks like this. University students gather in a gym and rally for peace. Churches draw up on plans for safe spaces, a refuge during potential chaos. Fringe groups pass out flyers advocating for various kinds of instigation if a grand jury decides not to indict a police officer who 3.5 months ago shot an unarmed teenager. It's that decision which authorities have for days signaled was imminent but now seems slow to come that has brought St. Louis into a bizarre holding pattern with little agreement here in St. Louis about what will happen in the city after the grand jury resolutions. There was some chatter that that a decision was imminent Friday.
Yeah.
And then they broke and said, no, we're not close, so we're going to go. We're going to go back and we'll hit it again in the new week. So again, we wait, and I think we had the story about a week ago. But it's interesting as I think it's a proper term of in a holding pattern.
So wouldn't you like to be the prosecutors in this case, or fly on the wall as the prosecutors discuss this? Because you know there have been some solutions that have been suggested, like letting the grand jury report come out on a Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Schools weren't in session,
you know, schools
and
weren't
likewise.
In session.
Yeah.
And then also, you know, there is something very bothersome, not about legitimate protests, because, you know, fine, I think that there's a case to be made that something very bad happened here. I don't know. But in addition, one wonders if there aren't just a cadre of people who are waiting to steal televisions.
Well,
and to break the law, and so then you see things like shoot to kill orders, which mm-hmm. are being rumored, you know, around, and that of course leads to even more terrible stuff.
Well, you've got, I mean, the store owners have already boarded up their stores, letting people know that they're still open for business, but that the stores, especially the stores owned by the African-American community, shouldn't be a target here because it just doesn't make any sense to loot the business people that are that support the community. But what I found interesting in reading the story in the Washington Post is that you have the new Black Panthers, which I assumed would come back in some way, and this is one of those opportunities for organizations to come back, but also the Revolutionary Communist Party. It's like going back.
Can you imagine?
It's like going back in time, you know, to the when we had in the late 60s and early 70s all these incredibly left-wing splinter groups who would do some of this agitating, but we also then found that they were some of these groups were FBI fronts to make the agitation happen, so to make all the peaceful people look bad. So you have to wonder.
No, it's true. It's true. But I do remember that during the Great Peace Marches and the Civil Rights Marches and stuff, some of these groups that, and by the way, some of them were real. They weren't FBI.
Oh, I know.
Attaching themselves to the legitimate protest marches in order to make political hay.
Right.
You know, I think if you go back to the 1930s and to the Depression, you will find that there was great fear on the part of the American political establishment that these guys were going to make real chaos.
Right.
And I do remember that the marshals in some of those marches were very careful about sort of minimizing the affect of, if that's the right word, of the people who were insisting that they wanted to be the on the marches and make trouble.
So if they don't indict, that's when we expect the real trouble.
I think it's going to be all hell's going to break loose.
Okay. No, Libby, but you don't think Joe's point is well taken. If there are two choices, indict or don't indict.
So if they indict.
Yeah.
If they indict, I think people
basically free pass.
Well, for whom though? If they indict Darren Wilson, cop, they indict him for murder, which is what people want in this case, then you will see, I think you will see some protests. I think you will see the KKK coming onto the street. I think you will see some ultra-right wing folks coming onto the street to incite violence with the Black community about this. I don't think you'll see the Black community coming out to protest and get into it with the cops. If they do not indict, then I think we see a massive conflagration of people on all different scales coming out, and we will have violence, and we will have, we could very well have death as a result of this. I think, you know, this community is on edge. This is a community majority minority, yet the people in charge are white, and we need to do, they need to do some work there to balance that power out. And if they do not indict the police officer, I think there's going to be a lot of people on the street. And while everybody's organizing for calmness, I don't think that that's what's going to end up happening, because all it takes is one person to throw one rock.
Well, okay, but let's ask this question, following up on Joe's good question. What if the grand jury is aware of the consequences of either indicting or not indicting?
And they have to be.
Yeah. And do what is not the right thing, but do what is the political thing. In other words, we don't want the city to burn. Mm-hmm. We'll indict this guy, and maybe the jury, it's not our problem. The jury, it'll be a trial, and the jury will not convict. But then what if the jury does the same thing? You know, the jury does the same thing.
You're just passing the buck.
Yeah. Right. You know, this is a no-win in many, many different ways to look at this as a no-win situation. But the fact remains, an unarmed African-American youth was shot down in cold blood.
That's correct.
And somebody needs to be held responsible for it.
I couldn't agree more with you that that's what happened, and that there's a great shame, and that there's some evidence that the kid did what he was told, and that, you know, that it was outrageous. But police officers all the time, confronted with circumstances, do things.
Yeah.
And inevitably, up to now, almost inevitably, unless it's really heinous, your word, the officer is given the benefit of the
doubt.
That's
right.
I mean, we'll find, you said in cold blood, and I think that's what they're looking at now. We can't say until we see what the grand jury says.
I mean, well, a lot of people are saying. You say we can't say. I say the problem here is that a lot of people are saying, based on the available evidence and the testimony that's leaked out or that's around. And then the question is, should the public be given the minutes of the grand jury, which has not happened?
That's an interesting one, because the prosecutor says, indeed, all that information will come out. And apparently there's some controversy, because a judge has to say it's okay for you to do that. And I don't believe, as of right now, the judge has said to the prosecutor, yes, you can do this. But the prosecutor is saying all this information will come out. All the testimony will come out.
We are going to take a break. By the way, I just got an NPR breaking news alert.
Yeah.
Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel is resigning.
Oh.
Yes. So we beat NPR as usual.
Yeah. Did they find the Lindbergh baby?
No. It just seems that the Supreme Court has ruled in favor of George Bush. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The hanging Chad and whatnot?
Right,
oh, darn.
So,
breaking news.
We'll get
to Lakshmi Singh reports.
Gore will not be president.
Well, that was fun. Let's take a break.
We'll be back right after this.
Support comes from Mother Earth Storehouse, a Hudson Valley natural food grocer and vitamin center with locations in Kingston, Poughkeepsie, and Saugerties. Serving the community since 1978, MotherEarthStorehouse.com. The Office of Dr. Vivian Letizia, Woodstock, Orthodontic, Cosmetic, and General Dentistry, featuring laser and digital technologies, WoodstockDentist.com. Capital Cities Imported Cars, Glenmont, New York, offering new and pre-owned BMWs and Volkswagens, serving the WAMC listening area since 1975, CapitalCitiesBMW.com. And Grist Mill Real Estate, Saugerties, for 40 years a locally owned independent realtor, offering one-on-one consultations for buyers and sellers, and specializing in homes in Saugerties, Woodstock, Kingston, and beyond. GristMillRealEstate.com.
Good morning and welcome back to the Roundtable. It is 9:48 on this Monday morning. We welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. And we've been talking about many topics this morning. As a result, we have many letters this morning, and we go to those now.
We do. Okay, that's right. Let's see here. It ain't Tom Tom, I know that. Okay. Folks, on the BBC last night, a citizen of Ferguson opined this grand jury is waiting for colder weather. Yours, Bonnie. Mm,
interesting.
And Janice says, I've always had an impression of Chuck Hagel as inept at this particular job. That's from Janice. Okay.
That's funny, because the New York Times at the very end talks about how he had difficulty sort of communicating with the reporters, and
yes,
they made him sound like Casey Stengel to some extent.
Yeah, and Andrew says, why do you take a BBC break at the halfway point? It is essentially the same items we heard at 9 a.m., and if it breaks up the flow of the discussion. Signed, Andrew. Joe?
Well, we've always taken NPR. We've always taken NPR news, and actually this is much shorter than the NPR news break that we used to take.
Right.
NPR has changed their schedule, their clock. They no longer make a newscast available to us at
Frankly, I'm very angry at them for that, but more to follow on that.
Yes. Yeah. So we decided to take the shorter the BBC news, which in that break we just heard broke the story on Chuck Hagel, which I think is important to
and
break.
Did it beat NPR? On that?
Well, you don't know. We weren't.
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, we don't know because they don't have newscasts anymore. So I don't.
Ouch.
It's hard to tell.
Let's ratchet down the
bitterness. And our dues will go up.
All right.
Okay. All right. Ouch again. And Nate says, I hate hearing this idea that illegal immigrants are doing jobs that Americans do not want. The real situation is they're doing these jobs for lower pay than what Americans are willing to work for. If the immigrants are either deported or made citizens, these positions can come into compliance with current labor laws. The argument that usually follows this idea is that produce prices will skyrocket. If the current prices of produce depends on slave wages, it isn't worth it. And our very good friend Roberta, a.k.a. the professor's wife, says foreign college students pay full price for tuition, room, and board. American students get assistance. Colleges need the foreign students who pay full price. That's what they say. Okay. Okay. Jason says, good morning. It seems as though nobody notices an illegal immigrant unless they are Hispanic. There are plenty, capital letters, plenty of Irish, Russian, Canadian, and other Caucasian immigrants that came here illegally. Thanks. Jason from Hudson. You want to answer that?
No. I mean, I'm sure there are Finnish illegal immigrants running around the street right now.
Yes, but we're talking about numbers here, are we not?
I have no idea.
Oh, okay. Very good. You don't want to...
I don't have any facts and numbers in front of me.
Yeah, okay. Okay, but I don't think there's any question that this has been a real flood and that Jason is right, that there are people who've gotten here other ways in boxes. I just saw a very bad movie on television, which early in the morning, like 3 o'clock in the morning on the American Movie Channel, in which they take a mafia hitman and they put him on a plane... In a box, they box him in, and when he gets out, he runs for the bathroom.
Okay, thanks for that.
Thanks
image
for sharing
so early in the morning.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Nice. Enjoy, everyone. You're having your coffee.
I thought you were gonna tell us about swing kids again. I didn't know we were going in that direction. All right.
JR says, "Good morning, panel.
Good morning.
For practical and humanitarian reasons, wouldn't it be reasonable to consider increasing the quota of immigrants coming here from anywhere in the Americas? Did we say that already? Both a concession to the relative ease of breaching a shared border and an act of compassion to people so desperate they'd risk possibly jumping from a frying pan into a fire." And I think that's what
I think
got.
You did read that one.
Yeah, I think so. All right. Well, it's so worth reading a second time because it's really good. Yeah.
Okay, fine.
We seem to be up to date in the letters. Do we take the break?
I'll take another one.
Did we take the break? We did. Thank you.
Right. It's so interesting. I always ask Hopper the same thing. Did we take a break?
I forgot whether we took the break.
Or in the afternoon, I said, did we, during Vox Pop, did we take that second break?
Yeah. I was surprised. We're making very good time today. This is excellent. All right.
We'll be at the Museum of Broadcasting in no time at this rate. Send the tapes out.
Oh, you know, this Marion Barry passed away.
Yeah.
Four-term D.C. mayor, was the most powerful local politician of his generation. I mean, I as a kid who grew up in Washington, D.C., after we left, I mean, that was no other mayor that I knew of who ran the city and obviously had a lot of troubles.
Yeah.
I think it's safe
not
to
Toronto
say.
Troubles, but it's certainly some troubles.
Well, weren't they cocaine problems?
Yeah, crack.
Perhaps
crack
not to the cocaine. Extent that...
Crack cocaine.
Yeah.
Well, we don't know that, but...
But he came back. He made a magnificent comeback.
He came back, and they elected him again.
Amazing.
Well, you know, I mean, I think there is... How to say this? There is such frustration on the part of large parts of the African-American community, justified frustration, by the way, that the way that they've been handled and the way that they've been repressed is that when you get somebody who may be in violation of the standards set by the white establishment, they say, okay, it may be that he's a bad person, a bad citizen, but that we're going to vote for him just to stick it to the white establishment.
Well, you know, it's not like the white establishment is all that scandal-free in their politics.
Correct, yeah.
You know, Huey Long is a great example of how to use politics to your own advantage and line your pockets while you're at it, you know. So, and
well, but they shot him.
Well, that's lovely, but just
do you know
the same.
Who shot him?
No, who shot him?
No, I mean, who really shot him?
No, I don't know who really shot him. It was the same person who really shot Kennedy?
No, but,
or is
I, can,
somebody
but
else?
I can tell you this much.
Uh-huh.
Without making any accusations, and I mean that, Franklin Roosevelt said, that the two most dangerous people in America at the time were General of the Army, Douglas MacArthur.
And Huey Long.
And Huey Long.
But, you know, the other part of this is that in a city like Washington, D.C., that was so segregated and the folks were so kept under the boot of Congress, and white controlled Congress in terms of money and budgets and not being real citizens, can't vote for the president. You know, you see a group of people coming together to elect a guy who's charismatic, who actually could get something done in the ways he got things done, who reelected him again after all of the sorrows that he went through, all the troubles that he had, and ending up in jail. You know, would we do that here in Albany? Maybe.
So what are you really saying?
Well, that he did his job. Was he a flawed individual? Yes. He gave pride to a community that needed pride.
Well, what makes you think you give pride to a community if you're caught smoking crack cocaine?
But in the totality of everything he did, you know. No, I think that there were people who were very disappointed with that and very, very embarrassed by what he had done. But they reelected him as mayor because you can come back. You know, his was the quintessential,
the voters,
quintessential
he
success.
Cleaned
he,
up his
he
act.
Cleaned
and
up,
he came
and
back.
He came back. He came back.
Yes.
Yes, he did.
But, all right. You know, with that,
no, I've been warned on several occasions not to say anything bad about somebody on their way out, and I think that's a pretty good rule, to be honest with you.
Well, he's out now.
Yeah. We did hear from Bill, who said, multiple eyewitness accounts, including some from African-American witnesses, support Darren Wilson's case. If this was an innocent teen gunned down in cold blood, as the liberal panel suggests, how is it that Officer Wilson suffered facial fractures stemming from the incident? Has the panel seen the video of Michael Brown physically threatening and robbing a local convenience store just before the incident took his life? Michael Brown was a thug and a young adult, not an innocent teen. That's from Bill.
I don't think we were members of the grand jury. I think we were just talking about the effects of both cases.
Right, and I do think you're right, Joe, that it was a balanced discussion. I don't think anybody here made an assessment that was that Michael Brown was totally innocent of this.
Boy.
Sure.
You know, real quick, because Bob wrote a note about the Benghazi report and didn't want us to ignore it, and it was on our docket today. We only have about a minute left.
Go ahead.
It's a fascinating. I was surprised that this report did not make more news, especially with Lindsey Graham saying that it was full of crap.
Yeah. Well, that made news.
Well, that certainly made news.
It might be because nobody's paying attention to him anymore. All he keeps saying is the same old thing.
Hey, guys, don't ignore the Benghazi report that came out late Friday. A Republican-led committee found no basis for any of the cover-up charges made against President Hillary. That's worth mentioning.
Yes.
And so we did.
And so it goes. We are done. Thank you very much for joining us. WAMC.org/roundtable. WAMC.org/roundtable. We'll be back tomorrow for another edition in the roundtable. Roundtable continues after this break.